Sai Ram listeners, welcome again to Radio Sai Answering Booth, and this is Prem welcoming you to the show with humble pranams to Swami's lotus feet. This is a question and answer program, and so it is indeed befitting to start by praying to Swami to remind us that the questions are His and the answers are His too. He is the speaker and He is indeed the listener as well. We have two questions for this week, so let's dive into the program with no further delay, but not before I read for you the quote of the week like I do every week. And this one's again from India's literary genius Rabindranath Tagore. And the quote is, "Faith is the bird that feels the light and sings even when the dawn is still dark." I'll read it again for you. Faith is the bird that feels the light and sings even when the dawn is still dark. That, listeners, is one of my favorite quotes, and it perfectly defines what is expected of a devotee. He says a devotee with faith should be like that bird which sings even when it's dark, knowing for sure that the dawn is certainly coming. As devotees, we must have that faith that makes us smile, laugh, sing and rejoice even when we are in the thick of problems. We need not wait for our problems to melt away, just like how that bird does not say, "I'll sing when it really becomes bright and the darkness goes." Our confidence that Swami will solve this problem, Swami will take care of me, Swami will answer my prayer should be so firm that we can radiate happiness even when in the middle of those problems or troubled situations. What a genius Tagore is. You will agree with me here, listeners, because to be able to convey such a profound thought in such a crisp manner is simply amazing. Alright then, listeners, time for the questions. And yes, we have two questions this week too. The first question is from a mother who lives in the Middle East. She has requested I avoid mentioning her name, and so I'll definitely not be mentioning her name. I have a volunteer sister, Sumana, who is going to be reading out the question for us. So let's listen to the question. It's an interesting one, and it's a very common one too. And then we will try answering that.
Sai Ram, I am a mother of two daughters. My elder one is 13 years old and is in grade 9, and younger one is 8 years old. My elder daughter wants to cut her hair and keeps arguing if I refuse. I have been brought up in a way where whatever that is told to us is to be obeyed. But this generation is not ready to accept like that. I only know that it is not our culture for a girl to cut her hair. But this reason is not convincing. This is only an example. There are so many issues where I feel it is not the right way to do as she wants, but I do not know the right reasons. How can I convince and make her accept?
Thank you for that question, sister. I think I would not be wrong in saying that dealing with teenage children could be the most testing challenge, and anything that really tests us so much also comes with the immense opportunity for spiritual progress. But before I say what is going to be a part of my answer, let me tell you what will definitely not be a part of my answer. I am not going to tell you how to convince your daughter not to cut her hair, and I also feel that you have only given it as an example, as you yourself have mentioned, to convey the underlying problem of it becoming more and more difficult to discipline children these days. So I'd first like to make three points which, as parents, as elders, we need to understand and, more importantly, acknowledge. The first two are general trends that apply to all ages, not specific to children, but the effects are seen in children. The last point will be specific to the age group of children that you just mentioned, that is, teenagers. Firstly, I'm quite young to say this with complete authority, but I'm sure elders we've seen a few generations will agree with what I'm saying, that over the years, children's obedience has been on the decline. This is especially more pronounced in the recent generations. And when I say that obedience, I'm only referring to obeying instructions of parents and elders without questioning. So it's not that they are becoming disobedient in that sense, but it is more a case of them wanting reason and understanding for instructions they are given. In the past, the very fact that my mother or father is telling me to do something was absolutely good enough reason to follow. But now, we need a logical explanation why something has to be done. There are many causes for this, but today, as part of this show, I'd like to draw your attention to one very subtle change that is happening. And this applies to all of us, of all age groups. Now, increasingly, we are considering knowledge and information to be one and the same. I'll explain that with an example to make it a little more clear. Let us say an elderly person about 20 years ago was speaking to us about World War II, right? This means either he has lived through that period or he has gathered that knowledge by reading from books. So I will have more reverence to what he is saying, because what he is saying is equivalent to many, many hours of me reading books, or it is his experience which I can never myself get, right? But in today's information age, let's say that morning you tell me that I have to give a talk on World War II, I can just spend 3 hours surfing the internet, and in the evening, I can come and give you a 1 hour talk. Well, this is definitely not knowledge. This is just information, and it is superficial. But for all purposes, it gets my job done, right? So I tend to equate the knowledge of elders to only few hours of my minimal effort. Right? I hope you're following me there. So I tend to equate the knowledge of elders to few hours of my effort alone. Because of that, information is right in my own pocket. It's in my own smartphone because of that. So I no more respect that knowledge, and also inadvertently lose respect and reverence for that age behind that knowledge. This is actually mixing up of knowledge and information, but see how it expresses itself in us giving lesser respect to age. So with the increase in access of information, I am giving lesser and lesser respect to experience and in turn to age. I'm certainly not justifying disobedience, but this is a trend, and in children especially, it shows up as, I will not listen to you just because you have lived more years than me. So countering this is more than just strictly telling children to obey, because as parents, elders, as a society, we have to drive this into children that wisdom and experience cannot be got from casual reading. And always, what can be got by life experience is irreplaceable. And it is for that reason that we must respect age. So this is not about we telling children strictly, but this is a very, very subtle understanding that we'll have to consciously drive into children's minds. Second point, this is the age of globalization. You know, we all know it. Our idea of living, lifestyle, fashions, manners, everything has a global influence. Especially if children go to school where children from different cultures come together, it has its effects too. Now, there are certainly a lot of positives in such upbringing, but it also increases the difficulty when we are trying to get children to follow certain traditions, right? This we can make out even when we compare, say, an Indian child who's brought up in a village, an Indian child, say, who's brought up in a metropolis in India, and an Indian child who lives in a different country. So as the homogeneous nature of the surroundings reduces, more difficult it is to make children follow any specific set of traditions. And now, as I said, where there is so much connectivity, thanks to internet and all our social media, it is almost impossible to stop outside influence. This is one more factor, and again, these things certainly cannot be wished away or even resisted too much. The last point I'd like to make, as I said, is specific to the age group that was mentioned. The teenage or the adolescent age, as most of us know, is the most volatile period of our life and has to be handled with a lot of care. And I think being parents, you know it much better than I. I'll just mention few points on what actually defines this age. I acknowledge that child psychology is a very, very vast and growing field, and I'm no expert at that, but I'll only make a few observations, and I'm sure that these are accurate too. Firstly, this is the age when the rebel or the fighter in us sets in, where one really resists pressure from outside. And this expresses as asking questions when told to do something. Along with this, slowly the strong sense of individuality starts setting in. The children start growing out of the I am so-and-so's son or daughter identity, and And the rebel and sense of individuality is very closely interrelated, and they literally take root and grow together. I'm not saying that these are bad qualities. These are actually essential changes that happen in us. And another feature of adolescence is, which I'd like to mention here, is a very subtle change. I feel this is the age when children really start making more complex mental connections. Again, let me try to explain that. When a child is an infant or a toddler, say, the child learns everything that happens around it. It does not really choose. It does not choose what to follow and what not to follow. So the brain makes very simple connections. Action and reward. Mistake and punishment. What my mother does, I should do. What my father does, I'll also do the same way. So the child literally learns by plain imitation. But around the teenage, the mind also starts figuring out that there are short-term benefits, long-term benefits, immediate consequences, and larger purpose. So this sort of thinking possibly starts very earlier too, but I think it is more pronounced in this age group, and added with the points of individuality and the idea of rebellion I just mentioned, it becomes very, very noticeable. So for a mind which has started thinking like this, the explanations should also be more comprehensive. For most part, if parents are just prepared for this challenge itself, they will be able to deal with the situation more patiently and give more suitable answers. So, sister, I mentioned three things which cause this behavior in children. So what is the way to deal with each of these three points that I mentioned? When we cannot convince children purely through respect, we have to give more suitable answers. So one thing, seriously think before you tell your children anything. And before telling them anything, see if you yourself are following it. I think that goes without saying, because learning by imitation continues even into the teenage. One thing that could possibly be done is, especially in an issue like what you have mentioned in your question, make it very clear that till a certain age, say 16 or 18, or till she graduates from school or whatever you feel appropriate, she must follow these rules that you put for her, with explanation or without explanation. Be very firm and stick to it. The other method which I have seen parents following is attach reason to something they revere. As I said, the underlying problem is my parents telling me is not enough reason, because that reverence for age is on the decline, as I just explained. So can we inculcate in them reverence for Swami? Then almost for all important disciplines, it is more than enough if we tell our children, Swami wants us to be like this. I've seen this change in many, many youngsters. You know, they will be leading a very wild life. Then when devotion to Swami takes root in their heart, they will be prepared to live through any discipline just for the sake of Swami. Being Swami's devotees, I think we can certainly make use of this. But for that, we must bring up children with the idea that loving Swami is obeying Swami. And more importantly, follow it ourselves as parents and elders. The second point is about cultural influences from outside. You know, Swami would give us this example when we were students. When you have a pot of water and you keep it in the open, the water will evaporate and also seep away. That's quite natural. But when you keep this pot inside a bigger trough of water, meaning the pot is also surrounded by water, the loss of water will be much lesser. Swami would say, similarly, the values that Swami inculcates in us as students, when we were Swami students, is intact when we are in the hostel surrounded by like-minded people. But when we go out after we graduate, it is like taking this pot of water out of the water trough and keeping it in the open. The chances of we forgetting values is much, much more. So Swami would say, create a trough of water, a small spiritual circle wherever you go. Within the larger life, create a small world for yourself where you have like-minded friends, where you're able to spend time in satsang, in bhajans, in seva. Then the values in you can be retained. It's the same thing we have to do for our children. Can we create that sort of a spiritual environment around our children, which will not stop outside influence altogether, but will certainly reduce it to a great extent? As I said, children in this age group go through a certain conflict. We spoke about that, complex connections in the mind. See, they want to be a part of their peers, but at the same time, they also want to stand out individually. If we stamp out their individuality at home by insisting that they have to simply obey, the more they will be vulnerable to peer pressure outside. The more we answer them confidently in such issues, the more their individuality and, more importantly, the sense of belonging to their culture increases, and that will help them stand up against bad peer pressure when they are outside the home. So if your children are devoted to Swami, let me tell you, there is no other sense of belonging that is required. What better example can I give you other than the thousands of students that have passed through Swami's schools and colleges? Just that single thought, this will please Swami, or Swami wants it this way, was the cause for 99% or even more of the discipline that all these students exhibited in the hostel. Next, I spoke about those complex connections that are made in the mind at this age. So this is a perfect age to start talking to children about the purpose of life. What are we trying to achieve through life? Slowly bring in the idea that life is not about making money and living comfortably or to be looked up by others in society. This, I feel, is very, very important, because most parents in this age end up telling children how they must study. If they don't study well, they will not get a good job, then they will not be able to earn and live comfortably. So children end up thinking, we study, earn and do everything for adding more pleasure to life. So why should I not do something that gives me pleasure now? Swami keeps saying that spirituality has to be taught early, not after all our teeth have fallen down, right? It is in this age children start realizing that life is long, that a single act can have lifelong consequences. There are multiple things that one can do, but one has to choose wisely. All of these thoughts start setting in this age, in the teens. So you can't teach them the value of culture if you don't teach them the spiritual basis of life. But this is also the age of rebellion, as I mentioned, so ideas will not be accepted readily. I mean, we have to be prepared for that. But I think I will not be wrong in saying, though outwardly they may reject all of these things that are told in this age, it does go into their thinking and it will start surfacing later when that adolescent period passes. So as parents, your duty would be to keep telling them, repeating what needs to be said, even if it makes you unpopular and boring. There are some things in life whose value is realized and made use of only in hindsight, and sadly, parents' words of advice is one of them, and we need to acknowledge that. Final point. One, there is no better way to instruct children than self-example. There is no replacement for that. Two, Swami would say, morality and discipline can be infused only in a spiritual environment. So a spiritual training is absolutely mandatory for morality to sink in and take root. And lastly, after all this, remember that your children have their own destinies, their own paths. Parents have to keep this always in mind. Make your best efforts, but remember, as Khalil Gibran would say, your children are not your children. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. So thank you for that question. This listener from Middle East, if you have any further questions to ask, you can always mail me again at prem@radiosai.org. The next question for today is from a very regular listener. She also very regularly sends us feedback for our various programs. So I'm very glad to have a question from her. Actually, she has sent a few questions and I'll try to spread them across weeks rather than answering them together on one show. She has sent us the question in her own voice. Very grateful for that. So I will allow her to introduce herself to all of you.
Sairam Prem, my name is Prashanti and I'm from Indiana. I just wanted to share with you my question regarding the program. I hope it is apt for the program. One thing which keeps bothering me all the time is this question. we always heard Swami said we should not brood over past. Past is history and future is mystery, and present is what is omnipresent. At the same time, we often heard him saying we have to, whatever actions we do now, whatever seeds we sow now, the fruits are what we get in future. So if we are wanting to have good fruits, we need to plant good seeds in present. We just can't sit back and relax. So that's one thing. So what happens is, say if I, my mind sometimes says if I want some desire of mine to happen, for that I need to do something, I have to do act right now, I have to do something about it, that's what my mind says. But then again my heart says, Swami often said, just like we don't carry our luggage on top of our head in train, we just sit back and relax, I don't need to do anything, I should wait for the inspiration, Swami knows the best, he will make sure he connects the dots and he will plan the best and he'll inspire us, we should wait for that inspiration. So when it comes to this moment, what needs to be done? Sometimes I feel we should not worry too much about future. Swami knows what we need and he will do things and he'll take care. Then again, at the same time, I feel for that to happen, I am supposed to act fast and do something right now. So when it comes to action versus inaction, what needs to be done at the present, this mind versus heart confusion always happens. Sometimes I say, maybe it's my mind, my desire is prompting me to act, I feel. And then again, my heart says, we don't need to think or desire anything, Swami knows. We should just sit back and relax and watch the show. So this confusion I always keep getting. I hope my question is apt for the program. I would be glad if you could share your thoughts regarding this with some of your, any excerpts from this course or any personal, experiences of students or any devotees you came across in regards to this. That would be great. Thank you. And Sai Ram.
Thank you very much, Sister Prashanti, for sending such a wonderful question and for sending it in your own voice. First, I'll break up the question to summarize the two main aspects that were asked in that as I can see it. Firstly, Swami says present is most important, but he also says that what we do now affects the future, so be careful. I'll add to that by saying that Swami also says that we must learn from our past. So how can we be living in the present when we are thinking of the past and we are careful about the future, right? That seems to be paradoxical. The second aspect to that question is, if we have dreams for the future, if we have aspirations, are we supposed to act now or do we surrender to Swami and wait for the inspiration or command from Swami? So how do we decide what is the best for the present, action or inaction? I would like to see that as a question that says that when we have decided to surrender to Swami, how do we know whether we are supposed to act in the direction of our aspirations, or are we supposed to remain patient and inactive and wait for things to happen and wait for inspiration to come? As I said, very interesting question. I don't know how much I can share in the time I have. I'll explain as much as I can, and let's hope some of the question in future will give us the opportunity to dwell more on this particular theme. Alright then, Swami says that present is important. He says it is not ordinary present, it is omnipresent. You know, that's what Swami would say. I think that much is clear, that what we have in our hands is only the present, the now, this moment. So what should I do in this moment if I cannot think of my past or worry about my future? I'd like to share one chinnakatha which Swami would say here. I've heard Swami narrate this many times, but honestly, I could never really understand it for a very, very long time. So here goes the chinnakatha. There is one man who gets lost in the forest. Suddenly a lion jumps out from the bush and starts chasing him. So this man runs and climbs a tree. And after climbing, he realizes that there is a snake on one of the branches above. So there is a lion threatening his life below, a snake threatening his life above. And just then, from a beehive in one of the higher branches in the same tree, honey starts dripping on this man. So this chap who's stuck like this starts relishing the honey, forgetting the lion and the snake. This is the story, and Swami would say whenever he narrates the story that this is the plight of modern man today. He has no fear of what is going to happen or no sense of urgency to save himself. he is enjoying his life like this man. And whenever I heard this story, I would think, but Swami, what is wrong in that? Isn't that man living in the present? Because that is the idea we've been given through movies and novels. That living in the present means living life, you know, completely, fully, without any worry of future, just enjoying the joys of that moment. And I would think, Swami, isn't that person doing just that? And I wonder how many of you are thinking like me when I recall that story. Okay, going back to what Swami says about the present, we'll come back to that story a bit later. Swami says that present is most important. But why is it so important? Swami says that present is like a seed of a tree. It has in it the efforts of a tree of the past and also has in it a future tree. So the reason the present is important is not because of itself, but because it contains the past and the future. So when we look at our present, we cannot look at it in isolation. Then why does Swami say, don't brood over the past, don't worry about the future? I think this is where we need to note the choice of words. Swami says, brood and worry. Both of these are emotions that weaken us. So in other words, don't bring from the past and the future what will weaken your present. Since the present moment is most important, bring from the past and future what empowers the present. So what empowers the present? The lessons from the past empowers the present. Learning from our mistakes of the past empowers us to make better decisions in the present. So bring that from the past. The sense of purpose empowers the present. The current moment is important because this is one moment in a larger journey. Let's say I'm saving to buy a house and I put away 5,000 rupees every month. 5,000 rupees as such may not be big money for me. Say I might spend it, that sort of money on a weekend vacation, just for example. But that 5,000 that I put away as saving for a certain purpose is more valuable because it is attached to a purpose. It is going to be part of an eventual sum that I will use to buy the house. Similarly, the present gets its value when we attach it to a purpose, a future goal. So going back to that Chinnakatha, what was that person actually doing wrong? He was caught in a crisis and that crisis demanded a certain action in that moment. It is not wrong to enjoy life, but if we enjoy life at the cost of the duty of that moment, it becomes wrong. And if that person had seen life as more than just the means of having pleasure, he would have done something to save himself and not lost himself to pleasure, right? So if thinking about the future makes you more careful and responsible in the present, makes you value the present more, considering the future is good. If going to your past energizes or helps you act wisely in the present, that going back to the past is not wrong. So that is about how the importance of the present is related to the past and the future, and how it is absolutely not right to live in the present with no care about the future or no regard for the past. In fact, Swami would say that living like that is like living like an asura or a demon. Unfortunately, that is glorified so much in the movies and media these days that we think that living in the moment means enjoying life at that moment. Now, coming to the next question, which I mentioned, if we have dreams for the future and we wish to surrender to Swami, do we wait for inspiration and command from Swami or do we act in the present? So how do we decide what is the best for the present, action or inaction? There are three important words here we need to deal with. They are action, inaction, and surrender. So first thumb rule, and I'm sure Sister Prashanti, you will know this already, surrender is not always equal to inaction. Surrendering can never mean not doing a prescribed duty or dharma. Swami says, surrender the fruits of your action. Surrender your worry, surrender your fear and anxiety. But sometimes the expression of surrender is patiently waiting or not doing anything. So if I can rephrase that question, when we are trying to surrender to Swami, when is it dharma to act? When is it dharma to not act? This has to be definitely in a case-by-case basis, and there really cannot be any absolute general rule which we can apply. But I'll just give a general idea to maybe give us a direction, because it's a very important question. It's a very important dilemma that most of us face. As I mentioned before, Swami says, don't worry about the future. See, there are many actions that we do which is born out of a worry or lack of faith. When we are waiting or trying to have faith in Swami, we should avoid those actions. One thing that comes to my mind is the concept of insurance. Now, I've personally heard Swami saying, why insurance? Don't you have that much faith in God? So this is a case of something that is seen as duty nowadays. It's, you know, parents think that it's their duty to take an insurance for their children, for themselves. But Swami says it's an expression of lack of faith. I remember once one of the elders speaking in Swami's presence, and he narrated how once they got a huge shipment from abroad, and the shipment was of equipment for super specialty hospital, and that consignment had to be brought by road from the shipping yard to Parthi. And usually before this is done, you have to insure the equipment, and the insurance premium for such expensive equipment itself ran into multiple lakhs. So Swami, so they had to take Swami's permission before they took this insurance. So they came to Swami, and Swami's response was typical. Swami said, when Swami's assurance is there, why do you need insurance? And to quickly complete the story, no insurance was taken, and the equipment came without any damage, which the engineers who had come to install were shocked to see. They said, even in the developed countries where there are the best roads, this equipment undergoes some damage in transit. And this is India, and getting it to such a distant village, nothing has happened. So, the point I'm trying to make is, when prompted to act, Sister Prashanti, ask yourself, what is the source of that prompting? Is it anxiety or fear? Or is it a feeling of, this is my duty and maybe I will be failing in my duty if I don't do this? If it is the latter, then I think you can do the required action and offer it to Swami. But if it is coming out of the idea of, say, what if Swami does not do what I'm praying for, is it better to do something as a safety precaution, then counter it by telling yourself that, no, Swami will take care, I don't have to worry. And a quick point about the past influencing our future when we try to surrender, this is also very important. You know, most of the choices we make in the present are drawn from our past experiences, right? Let me give you probably not a very serious example. Let's say that you have had a bad experience with a neighbor and he is from a certain country. The next time you meet a person from the same country, there will always be this urge to judge that person in the line of the experience that you've had in the past with that neighbor of yours. So this is quite natural. But now Swami says that don't judge people. So at this time, we have to counter the force of past experience by our strong thinking in the present. Be careful, definitely be careful, but don't be bitter. Try and filter out the unacceptable influences from the past, because that pollutes the purpose of the present. Before I conclude, I will give one more example which will cover, I believe, another aspect of this dilemma. Now, sometimes Swami would say that for those who have complete faith in me, I am there to cure them. But for those who don't have such faith, I have built hospitals. Right? Swami would say this, and I've heard Swami say this. So when as devotees we hear that statement, we want to depend on Swami to solve our health problems, right? It's quite natural. And I see this as a classic dilemma, because generally going to a hospital when we have a problem is part of our duty. But in this case, going to the hospital is like lack of faith or surrender. So what to do? I have seen some people, when they fall sick or have health problems, they will say that Swami will take care of me and I don't have to go to the doctor. But after that, they will become so restless that Swami is not curing them. They will get angry with Swami, lose their peace of mind. How can this be surrender? When we surrender, we should be at peace and feel light. So in such a situation, I feel it is right to do the necessary action and calm the restlessness of the mind. As long as, of course, the action is neutral and does not involve hurting or harming anyone. So many times the restlessness within that we feel in a certain situation may be an indication for us to do a certain action. But don't worry, as long as you have the desire to surrender to Swami, He will slowly lead you to that state of surrender. So in summary, living in the present is not living in gay abandon, as they say. It means acknowledging that the present contains the seed for the future and handling it with responsibility and purpose. When we have aspirations and are trying to surrender to Swami, certainly do your necessary duty, but resist doing actions that are born out of anxiety or lack of faith. But having said that, if our mind is too restless, I feel it is better to act and calm it down. But the action that we do in such a situation, just make sure that it is dharmic and it should not involve hurting or harming others. So you will eventually learn to surrender more and more with effort, because if we keep surrender as our goal, Swami will only create situations where we can learn to surrender and go closer to Swami. With that, dear listeners, it's a wrap for this week's Answering Booth. I thank the listeners who sent us those questions. And if you wish to send a question, you can send it directly to me at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. Some listeners were wondering if there's anybody else who's reading these mails that you sent to this mail ID. The answer is no. This is my personal ID and only I check these mails and read these mails, so you can send them without any hesitation. Only keep in mind that the questions have to be on practical applications of Swami's message in daily life or practical spirituality. So it's time for me to go now. It's time for me to hand over the stage to the next presenter. It's going to be a segment on service. We're going to have probably a program which talks about a service which is happening in Swami's name. So I offer the segment at Swami's feet and I take leave of you, but I'm going to spare you only for 3/4 of an hour or so, because I'll be back at 12:30 with Arvind for the afternoon satsang. And it's an interesting topic today. Do join us again. But do join me again at 11 a.m. next Thursday for the next episode of Answering Booth. In the meanwhile, if you have any questions, do send them across to me. Thank you for being with me. Jai Sai Ram.
मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना साई मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना मेरो लागे ना तेरे भी लागे ना तेरे बिना रे छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले नयन कमल मन मोहक मादक रंजित है अधरा रे तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले इस छवि को हम मन में भर कर तेरे गुण को गाए तेरे गुण को गाए मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना बिना जग माया काए बंधन टूट न पाए तेरे बिना जग माया काए बंधन टूट न पाए जीवन मैया पग पग डोले जीवन मैया पग पग डोले तू ही पार लगाए तेरी शरण में ले के प्रभु तू कृपा शांति बरसाए कृपा शांति बरसाए मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी अखियां तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना